You're listening to The Social Workers on WCDB Albany.
Welcome to the Social Workers Radio Talk Show. I'm your co-host, Alyssa Lotmore. And with me today, we have Tammy LeBrake. Tammy is a licensed clinical social worker with over 30 years experience in a variety of settings. In 2006, she dedicated her outpatient private practice to the treatment of OCD. Before making it her sole mission to defy OCD, she taught social work courses at Siena College and held several different nursing home industry positions. Now known for her expertise as an OCD therapist, Tammy is also the author of several books, including the OCD Coloring Book Journal and Face It with a Puzzle series. Welcome to the show, Tammy.
Hi, Alyssa. Thank you.
No, thank you for being here. Now, before we jump into all of your work, can you talk a little bit about what obsessive compulsive disorder is and maybe the risk factors for developing it?
Oh, sure. Obsessive compulsive disorder is, it's one of the top 10 disabilities because it's so serious and severe. It drives me crazy when people say, oh, I have a little OCD. This is a serious disorder. And what happens is your brain is sticky. There's just thoughts, they stick, and it's like glue. And those thoughts are very, for some reason, they're treated as real, and they're very afraid. People get very afraid that they're having these thoughts. Now, we all get weird thoughts, but for some reason, when someone with OCD gets these weird thoughts, they think it's very possible that something will happen, something bad will happen. And so what they do is, they try to get rid of the thought or the anxiety by being compulsive. So they come up with these little strategies, these little behaviors that they must perform in order to get rid of the thought or the anxiety. And sometimes those compulsions are mental compulsions. And so you have to be a detective to find those mental compulsions because there's no outward compulsion. But it's a very disruptive disorder because the thoughts feel so real to them.
Yeah, I've known somebody with OCD, and just that, you know, not even sometimes knowing why they're doing it. Is that like the sort of, I just have to do it. I have this feeling like I have to keep doing it this certain way, but with no explanation of like what would happen if they stopped. Or can you explain a little bit about that? Like, is it just this feeling of I have to continue to do it like this?
Yeah, there's two types of OCD. One is called harm avoidance. And harm avoidance is, I do these compulsions to prevent something bad from happening. And then there, the other type of OCD is just right OCD. So I do these compulsions because I can't stand feeling just wrong or off or incomplete, or I can't stand that I can't get a resolution, a complete feeling. So I do what I do until I feel just right.
So on average, though, it takes about 14 to 17 years before a person receives appropriate treatment. And it seems like what you were describing, it could be a little disruptive in life. So why does it take so long for people to get that treatment?
Well, a lot of people hide their symptoms. So, you know, you might have somebody with OCD who's doing all of their compulsions in their bedroom with the door closed, and nobody knows that this is going on. So sometimes they're just hiding the symptoms because they're so embarrassed or they're so afraid. What if people know what I'm thinking? You know, what will happen to me if they knew? So it can be hidden. The other issue is just getting that diagnosis. I've worked with so many people with OCD who were misdiagnosed. So for example, a woman who had postpartum OCD, you know, she was having thoughts of harming her baby, and she would never do it in a million years. And these thoughts really scared her, and she researched it and she realized, oh my goodness, I have OCD. And so she told her gynecologist she thought she had OCD, and her gynecologist said to her, she asked her, do you wash your hands a lot? And this woman said, no, I don't wash my hands a lot. And the gynecologist said, well, then you can have OCD. Or, you know, I've had like a young woman in college, just so disturbed by her thoughts, went to a psychiatrist, and because she had no outward compulsions, all of her compulsions were mental, the psychiatrist said, you know, you don't have OCD, you don't have any compulsions, but I do think you have a bipolar disorder, because when you were in high school, you wanted to be a CEO of a large company. So I'm going to put you on some medicine for a bipolar disorder. So there's a lot of people who are just not getting diagnosed properly. And that's why it takes 14 to 7 years to finally get the right treatment. The other problem is getting that treatment that you need. I, for example, have a huge waiting list, and it breaks my heart, you know, when I tell someone I can't get to you for 3 to 4 or 5 months, because I'm a specialist. And the other problem with getting treatment, the right treatment, is if you do a search on psychology today, you're going to find many, many therapists who say they are specialists, they treat OCD. But if you ask them, do you do ERP? Do you do exposure and response prevention? They might even say, what is that? Or no, I don't do that. I'm not comfortable doing that. And so instead they use techniques like, let's set up a worry time for you, or let's use thought stopping techniques like think of a stop sign or snap the rubber band on your wrist. Or they use as their guidebook a book called Brain Lock, which is not the appropriate treatment for OCD. So a lot of people do not get diagnosed and they do not get treated properly, because a lot of therapists are not using the gold standard treatment, which is exposure and response prevention and acceptance and commitment therapy.
Now, can you talk a little bit about the ERP? Because I'm not as familiar with it. Why is that the gold standard or the gold treatment method?
Well, it's evidence-based. So there are so many studies that show that it is the most effective way to treat OCD. But even ERP in the last couple of years has evolved and has changed a little bit, just because ERP first. Okay. So the exposure is let's find your triggers and let's confront those triggers. And we know that's going to trigger your anxiety. But that's what we have to do. We have to trigger your anxiety. This is very scary. This is not for the faint of heart, to do ERP. It isn't, it's not for the faint of heart if you're a therapist, and it's not if you're a client. So you're confronting your fears, and then the RP, the response prevention, is no matter what you feel, no matter how afraid you are or how uncomfortable you are, don't do anything to fix it. Don't do a compulsion. So that's ERP. I don't have a high dropout rate. I'm really very fortunate that so many people have gotten their life back, because this is a disorder that hijacks the brain. But there is a high dropout rate because it is a very difficult therapy to do.
And you said it's difficult for therapists too, to continue to work with clients with this, but it's a challenging type of therapy or treatment. Is that?
Yeah. You know why? Because, I graduated from SUNY Albany with my master's degree, and you're taught about empathy, and it's so important to have empathy when you're helping other people. And believe me, I have a ton of empathy. It's very hard work. But you don't really use much empathy in this therapy. So if somebody says to me, say that, okay, they've confronted a fear. They've touched what they thought would be poisonous. And all of a sudden they're getting tingling in their throat and in on their tongue. And they're starting to get extremely anxious, and they say, oh, I think my throat is closing up. Well, my response to that would be, okay, I'll just wait here for you. And, you know, when that happens, you know, we'll just deal with it. Mm-hmm. So that's not a lot of empathy. It's not like, oh my goodness, that must feel so horrible. And I bet you're so afraid right now. We don't use that. We use humor and we use creativity more than empathy.
Now, you mentioned that there's not a lot of therapists that are even specialists. So how did you get into where this is your expertise?
Well, as you said, I worked in the nursing home industry quite a bit, in different positions, a director of social work. I worked for the Department of Health inspecting nursing homes. I consulted in nursing homes. And then I finally just got my administrator's license, and I was an administrator of nursing homes. And John Lewis says, get into good trouble. And that's what I did in the as an administrator. I was asked to cut the budget, and I said, I'm not going to do that. And so I parted ways with nursing homes. And my friend, she said, come and join my practice, and we'll get you some clients. We'll start to build up your clientele. And I said, okay. And so she was referring clients to me. And she noticed that I really wasn't enjoying it. I was discharging people, and she didn't understand that. And we talked, and we realized that I'm not much at talking about a problem. I love to take action. I believe life rewards action. And so she said, okay, I think what you want to do is go get trained for OCD, because you're going to love it, because it's there's a beginning, there's a middle, and there's an end. And it's very action-oriented. So I got the training, and this is the longest I've ever stayed in one position. Since 2006, I've been treating people with OCD, and I love it very much.
Well, it seems like it's needed, especially since you said it takes so long for people to get appropriate treatment, to have someone who really is a specialist and can help individuals overcome this.
Yes. Well, people suffer. I mean, just think of that. They're suffering for many, many years before they finally get help. And that we need more specialists. I don't know what I'm going to do, because, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, maybe I'll retire, and I don't know what I'm going to do, because I need to train someone. I need to get someone who will be able to fill my spot here in the Capital Region.
Yeah, but it's a critical need. And I want to go jump back to something that you said before. You know, you said it's less empathy, it's incorporating humor and creativity. What did you mean by that in your treatment, as individuals are looking to, hey, maybe I want to work with individuals with OCD and be that type of therapist? What did you mean by it's less empathy and more humor? How does that incorporate it into your work?
Yeah, so say you have a teenage boy who he gets this thought, and it's stuck, that if his mother or his sister sit in the same chair that he sat in, they could get pregnant. And so I don't try to show the logic in that, like, well, that logically can't happen, you know, science doesn't work that way, because OCD does not respond to logic. You can't rationalize with OCD. OCD is like a three-year-old that doesn't know anything about life and is just asking a lot of questions. So with this boy, if I were to use humor, I would say, oh my gosh, you know, you're 12 years old. You're going to have to get a job to support all these children that your mother and your sister are going to have. Or say someone is afraid they have harm thoughts and they're afraid, oh, what if I stab my whole family? I would say, well, you know, I guess you'll just pay the consequences. And if you end up in jail, then you'll get a law degree. Won't that be great?
Yeah. Okay. I see how it works. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So it takes a special kind of person to do this. I mean, you have to think outside of the box and really be creative. And, you know, I don't have an office anymore since COVID. I just do video sessions. But in my office, you know, people would say, aren't you a therapist? And I would say, yeah, I'm a therapist. People who are tenants there. And they would say, well, I don't understand. You do an awful lot of laughing. I can hear laughter through the walls. And I'll say, yeah, it's a weird kind of therapy. We do try to find the humor in the situation.
Well, you have to, especially you, as you said, it's, you can't always rationalize because sometimes there isn't that logical reason for why they're thinking the way that they think. It's sort of, you have to incorporate that humor.
Yeah, it's fight absurdity with absurdity. And when you're smiling and when you're laughing, you can imagine what happens with the amygdala, you know, the fear center in our brain. You can imagine that when you're laughing and smiling and the amygdala is like, oh, well, they're actually laughing about this. So how serious can this actually be? And then you can almost feel like the amygdala deflates. So they did this study where they had people put a pencil sideways in their mouth, and it actually tricked the brain into thinking that they were no longer depressed.
Interesting.
So yeah, it's all about the messaging. The therapist has to give, has to be careful of the messaging, because it's a messaging that you give that it doesn't matter that you're anxious. What matters is that you're functioning. You can do anything with anxiety, but you can do little, nothing if you're avoiding. So you're as an OCD therapist, you're constantly giving the message, yes, you're anxious. That's just something you have to live with, but you can live well with all that anxiety, or you can live well with that discomfort. I use this, who do you want to be and how do you want to spend your time? And that's the acceptance and commitment therapy piece, is that I'm constantly saying, is this who you want to be? Is this all these compulsions you're doing? Is this how you want to spend your time? Is this who you want to be? So you're messaging the values. What are you fighting for? And remember what you're fighting for. You're messaging that anxiety is something you should want. If you're not anxious, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah. And as we talk about a little bit about anxiety, what is, you know, you're working from home, you said right now, and things are virtual because of COVID. For individuals who have OCD where it's related to like contamination or, you know, fear of like harm, how has this impacted your type of your treatment?
Yeah, well, I'm having a lot of fun. I have a microphone, an external microphone. Like, I'm not using it right now, but I have an external microphone. And so I will lean into the microphone to really emphasize certain points or sound. You know, I often play the role of OCD. And so I'll use the microphone to play the role of OCD so I can sound really scary and demanding. So that, you know, I've tried to be creative that way. And I really have had much, I would say, better success doing the video than having people come to my office. The one thing I can't do, which I did do before COVID, is, you know, you'd find me and a client at the mall or at a dumpster or practicing running over people, or so that I haven't been able to do. But as far as the video, I'll be able to. I mean, contamination is a piece of cake. I just say, oh, you're afraid of getting peanut butter on your work apron. Okay, well, let's go get some peanut butter and let's just slather it on your apron. And of course, they get very anxious. And the key is so when they're anxious, the key is to be glad, to be happy that the anxiety is there. Good. We want that. We want that anxiety. And remember what you're fighting for. So I'm able to talk all of this through as they do an exposure, whereas maybe they would have to go home from my office and do this exercise. And so I can't see them do it, and I can't coach them, and I can't see, oh, that was a compulsion. Let's do this over and skip that compulsion. So it's actually been very effective.
No, it seems like that's a really great way to do that. And would you continue with some of the virtual types of sessions that you're doing even after, you know, in the post-COVID days, if you're finding it beneficial?
Yeah, I'm never going back to an office. I'm clearing out my office this week, and I will do virtual, or I will do home visits or field trips, but never ever will I go back to an office. It's been that effective.
Now, I'm just curious, is there, when you said something like with the peanut butter or, you know, different types of, you know, compulsive or obsessions and compulsives, is there a reason behind that? Like, how does that develop? Is it because of a trauma or a trigger, or it's just something kind of out of the blue where that's just the OCD tendency?
Well, it's something we don't focus on. We don't try to excavate a memory to, okay, where might this have started? It's likely, it's possible, you know, that something happened in the past. Even just hearing your mom talk on the phone about somebody getting sick with mayonnaise or peanut butter, and, you know, just as a child hearing that conversation, is it possible that that got stuck somewhere in the brain and now it's surfaced? Yeah, that's possible, but we really don't spend time excavating the memories. If there's actually trauma, then, you know, we have to make sure the trauma is treated first. So if they are very much aware of a traumatic event, so for example, they really did, they really were hit by a car, and now they're afraid of hitting someone with their car, I would definitely have that person go work on some of the trauma over getting hit, before I would, practice, you know, having that person pretending to be running over people.
Yes. But that's not something that you really focus for the therapy and the treatment for the OCD. If there's not a past trauma, it's really helping them get through that, not addressing or sort of exploring what could possibly be a cause, because sometimes there might not even be an event that has caused this certain type of tendency. It might just be something that has developed.
Well, there are studies that show certain ways that you were brought up, or certain ways that you are discriminated against, can lead to the particular theme that you have. It doesn't cause OCD, but it can lead to the particular theme. So, for example, if you grow up in an environment where, say, you have a parent who is constantly saying, after all I've done for you, everything I've ever done for you, and this is how you treat me, and this is how you live your life, I've done so much for you. That person, there is a study that says that person is most likely going to have contamination fears. Or if you are African American and you are dealing with a stereotype of, oh, Black people are dirty, then you might have the theme of contamination fears.
I can see the correlation for how that might develop. And you're going to be doing an upcoming workshop here at the School of Social Welfare on Tuesday, August 18th. It's going to be via Zoom. Can you talk a little bit about what you're going to cover for, you know, for therapists who are interested in working with individuals with OCD? And as you already said, there's a shortage. What can we be expecting from this upcoming workshop that you're going to be doing? And it's titled Cognitive Behavioral Treatment for OCD.
Yeah, I'm so excited to do this, because we really need more people in this area. But what I hope to do is, first of all, ERP has evolved. So, of course, I'll cover the basis of ERP, but then I want to talk a little bit about how much it's evolved in the last couple of years. So oftentimes people think of ERP as you use it like you would for somebody that has a phobia. So say you have a kid who's afraid of crickets, and they won't even come out of the house because they're afraid a cricket is going to land on them. And so what would you do? You would set up a hierarchy. Okay, so I've got a container of crickets in the other room, and the kid says, "Oh my gosh, don't bring that, don't bring it in here." And I'll say, "Okay, well, why don't you just peek around the corner at it? Let's just do that." So we're beginning to climb a hierarchy to treat this phobia. So he peeks around the corner, and then, you know, okay, let's move the container a little bit closer, a little bit closer. Finally, it's in the room. Finally, it's on his lap. And finally, he puts his hand in the container. And then finally, the lid is off the container, and the crickets are jumping all over him. So that's a good example of exposure. And then the response prevention would be he would do nothing to get rid of those crickets that are crawling all over him. He hopefully will laugh and giggle because they tickle. So what has changed over the last couple years is we don't really focus on the SUDs, the subjective units of distress. So in that case, that I would say to him as he's peeking around the corner, okay, on a scale of 0 to 7, 7 being a panic attack, what is your number right now? And he would maybe say 5. And I'd say, okay, let's just keep looking at those crickets and until your anxiety comes down. And so that's kind of like a desensitization approach. And that is not what ERP is. It's more, let's see what we can learn about yourself and about your anxiety. And we don't really care if the anxiety comes down, because what's the messaging there? The messaging is, well, you should be able to get your anxiety down. And in the case of OCD, that's not true. You may not get the anxiety down. And so we don't want to give the wrong message. So some of the changes in ERP is also something I hope to cover.
Well, it should be a really great workshop. And for those interested, again, it's on Tuesday, August 18th. From 1 to 4 p.m., it's through the UAlbany School of Social Welfare Continuing Education Program. And for those listening, but this is a podcast, for those listening at a later date, Tammy, do you have contact information, or if people are interested, or a resource for more information if people are listening to this after your training occurs? How can they find out more about, you know, if they're interested in becoming a specialist in OCD and learning more about the ERP method?
Yeah, I have a website. It's called bossitback.com. So BOSSITBACK, bossitback.com. And sometimes I have training sessions that I put up on the webinar, on the website, and you can just register for a training session, or you can contact me through the website. The best thing to do would email me and not call me. I just get such a high volume of phone calls. So the best thing to do would just email me if there's questions or a need for anything.
Well, I'm glad we have this resource, but sometimes people listen to these at later dates and they were like, well, I want to know more information, or I missed the training. So thank you for providing that.
Yeah, thank you for doing it, Alyssa.
And we're running out of time, but I have one last question. Do you have any last thoughts or comments that you'd like to mention, or for people who might be listening who have OCD symptoms and they've haven't had the correct diagnosis or been receiving the treatment that's been effective for them? Do you have any final thoughts or things that you'd like to mention?
Well, I always say that the person with OCD has every right to be hopeful. By the time they get to me, they've been through a lot, and I want them to have hope. And I know that they probably have lost a lot of hope. I think people with OCD are actually more evolved than the average person. I think they know something that we don't know. We don't pay attention to it. People with OCD know that there's so little certainty in this life. So they're more evolved. We all walk around like we think we have it. We think we have certainty, and we don't. But these people with OCD, they know it doesn't exist. The problem is they live in a world where everybody acts like it does, and so they don't have the tools. I get kind of emotional when I talk about how awesome people with OCD are, because they're amazing people. They have this sideshow playing in their mind all day long. They got the sideshow, and yet look what they are able to do. They're amazing people. And my message is have hope, because with treatment, you, you have every right to be hopeful.
Well, thank you for sharing this, because I was really excited when I saw your topic on the continuing education page. And I think it's really something that is not talked about enough. I mean, I don't think in any of my coursework, I really talked more or talked about OCD, except for like just knowing what it was on that basic general level. So having you be able to say you're a specialist in this, knowing treatment methods that are effective, I was really excited to be able to talk to you today. So thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
And for our listeners, again, we were joined with Tammy LeBrake, who is a licensed clinical social worker, who in 2006 dedicated her outpatient private practice to the treatment of OCD. And I want to thank her. Thank you, Tammy, for coming on again to talk about this topic, because like I said, I had a basic understanding of OCD just through my schooling, but not to the level that you talked about today. Some of the symptoms that you mentioned, some of the compulsions and thoughts, I didn't really even understand or realize were in the OCD category. And I wasn't really sure about the best method of treatment. So thank you for coming on here and sharing this, sharing information with social workers and therapists who might want to begin specializing in this area and becoming more of having more of an expertise. And also thank you for sharing this information with individuals who might be having symptoms of OCD and not really sure how to go about it and get the correct treatment. So thank you so much for being on today.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm happy. I've found my mission.
You're listening to The Social Workers on WCDB Albany.